flowers. A deflecting laser round took him in the small of the back and dropped him, face down in the mire. Stunned, he writhed, no breath coming, mud sucking into his nose and mouth. Something made him pull himself up. Something. Some urge. Ilone. She stood over him, as pale and as beautiful as she had been at 20. "What are you doing down there? What will the boys do for supper? Husband?" She was gone as quickly as she had appeared, but McCall was already on his feet when the first of the chaos spawn closed in on him. On his feet, and seared with passion. Despite the burn, agonizing on his back, McCall took the first down with his hands, breaking his neck and ribs and crushing his skull. Capturing the las gun, he turned, setting it to full auto and cutting down a wave of chaos infantry as they pressed in on his heels. He was still shooting, blindly into the night, his las gun's power cell almost exhausted and 36 slain foe about him, when Korbeck found him. Gaunt established a picket perimeter in the sloping forest to guard them as the field medics treated McCall. The storm continued to lacerate the sky above and sway the trees with the shearing force of wind and nearly horizontal rain. Lilith, Gilbert, and Gaunt stood by as Trooper Lesp opened his field narthesium and dressed McCall's many cuts and las burns. The scout's head was bandaged, and his pierced knee had been strapped. "He's a tough old dog," Korbeck murmured to Gaunt, sidling up to the commissar. "He never ceases to impress me," Gaunt whispered back. Lilith looked over at them, a question in her face. Gaunt knew what it was. How had this man survived?
"We're wasting time," Gilbert said abruptly. "What are we doing?"
Gaunt turned on him, angry, but Lilith stepped between them.
"Major Gilbert, are you still my bodyguard commander?"
"Yes, lady."
"No new duties have fallen to you since you were given that task?"
"No, lady."
"Then shut up and leave this to the commissar and myself, if you don't mind."
Gilbert swung around and made off to check the pickets. Korbeck poked his tongue out at the major's back and made a vulgar noise. Gaunt was about to reprimand him when he saw that Lilith was laughing.
"He's a pompous ass," Lilith said.
"Indeed," the commissar nodded. "I meant no disrespect, Inquisitor," Korbeck said hurriedly.
"Yes, you did," Lilith smiled.
"Well, yes, but not really," Korbeck stammered.
"Check the picket, Colonel, if you please," Gaunt said quietly.
"But the Major's gone to—"
"And you trust him to do a good job?" Gaunt asked.
"Not on his current form, no,"
Korbeck grinned, saluting Gaunt and making an over-lavish bow to the Inquisitor before hurrying off.
"You'll have to excuse my second in command. His style of leadership is casual and spirited."
"But it works?" asked Lilith.
"Yes, but—" "Yes. Korbeck is the soundest officer I've ever worked with. The men love him."
"I can see why. He has charisma, courage, just the right amount of healthy disrespect. Colm is a very attractive man."
Gaunt paused and looked off into the night where Korbeck had vanished.
"He is?"
"Oh, yes. Trust me on that."
Lilith turned her attention back to McCall.
"So, we have your best scout, beaten and shot to hell, come to us out of the maelstrom."
"Yes."
Gaunt cleared his throat.
"McCall's the best I have, all in all. Looks like he's been through fething hell and back."
"Feth. Nice word. Good weight. I'll be using that if you don't mind."
Gaunt was puzzled. "Mind?
What does it mean?"
Gaunt suddenly got a very clear and vivid mental picture of what it literally meant. He and Lilith were acting it out.
I'm not sure."
"Yes, you are."
Lightning struck a tree nearby, causing blue bloods to run yelping for cover. The detonation was like a slap in the face for Gaunt. His mind cleared, sober.
"Don't play your mind tricks with me, Inquisitor," he snarled.
"I don't know what you mean."
"Yes, you do. Twisting a feeling of jealousy in me against Korbeck. And the images you were broadcasting. Feth is one of the Tanith tree gods, not some barbaric euphemism. I'll work with you, but not for you."
Lilith smiled solemnly and held up her hands.
"Fair point. I'm sorry, Gaunt. I'm used to making allies where I can't find them, using my powers to twist wills to my purpose. I suppose it's strange for me to have a willing comrade."
"Such is the way of the Inquisitor. And I thought the Commissar's path was lonely."
She stared into his eyes, and another smile lit her pale face.
Gaunt wondered if this was another of her guiles, but it seemed genuine.
"We both need to find and conquer the source of this," Gaunt told her, gesturing up at the storm. "We both want victory here. You'll find me a much more able ally if I am in full command of my powers, rather than spellbound by you."
She nodded.
"We both want victory here," she said, repeating him. "But that's not all I want,"
she added, mysteriously.
Gaunt was about to pick her up on it when she shivered, pushing back her cowl and running a hand through her fine hair. The Commissar Colonel realized how strange she looked.
"The storm.
It's really hard for you, isn't it?"
"I'm at my limit, Ibram.
The warp is all around me, tugging at my mind. I'm sorry about before.
Desperation."
Gaunt stepped towards her, ushering her towards McColl.
"You said you like to make allies where you couldn't find them. Why so hard on Gilbert?"
She grinned.
"He loves it. Are you kidding? A powerful woman ordering him around. He wants me so bad he'd die for me."
Now Gaunt grinned.
"You're a scary woman, Inquisitor Lilith."
"I'll take that as a compliment."
"Just promise you won't use such base tactics on me."
"I promise," she said. "I don't think I need to."
Gaunt suddenly became aware of how long he had been looking into her eyes. He broke the gaze.
"Let's talk to McColl."
"Let me."
"No," he corrected. "Let us." Gilbert walked the picket in the slicing rain. Invisible amphibians croaked and rattled in the wet gloom. By a fold of trees, watching the left flank, he found two Tanith ghosts occupied in trying to light smokes from a damp tinderbox. Gilbert pounced at them, kicking one in the gut and punching the other over onto his back.
"What is this?" he seethed. "Are you watching the flank? No, you're too busy lighting up and joking."
One of the men protested, and Gilbert kicked him again, in the face, the ribs, the kidneys, as he went down. He kept kicking.
"There's a universe of hate out there, and you can't be bothered to watch for it."
The other ghost had risen to defend his fallen, balled-up comrade, and Gilbert turned on him, punching him out, then laying in with the boot. A big hand caught the blue-blood major by the shoulder.
"There's a universe of hate waiting in here, too," Korbach said.
He dropped Gilbert with a headbutt that split the blue-blood's forehead. Then Korbach wailed in with two hard punches to the mouth and chest. The latter was deflected by the carapace segments. Gilbert sprawled in the mud, pulling Korbach down on him in a threshing frenzy.
"You want me, ghost? You got me," he growled.
"Not before time," Korbach agreed,
snapping Gilbert's head backwards with his fist.
"It's been a long while coming. That was for Cluggan, rest his soul."
Gilbert folded his legs up and propelled Korbach headlong over him with a kick. The big ghost slammed down against a tree stump, upside down, the sharp stump ends raking his back. Now Gilbert was on his feet, fists balled. Korbach leapt up to meet him, throwing off his cape, fury in his eyes. They edged around the muddy clearing in the slanting rain, water washing off them and sluicing the blood from their wounds. Punch and counterpunch, followed by bellow and charge. The two beaten ghosts were up on their feet, cheering and jeering. Others, ghosts and bluebloods both, congregated in a ring as the two officers battled by lightning flash. Gilbert was a boxer, a heavyweight champion back on Volpone, with a stinging right hook and a terrifying capacity to take punishment. Korbach was a wrestler, prize county victor 3 years running, at the logging show. Gilbert bounced on spread legs, throwing humiliating punches. Korbach came in low, soaking them up, clawing his hands around Gilbert's throat. With a roar, Korbach drove in under the whistling fists and slammed Gilbert backwards through a break of trees. They tumbled together down a short incline into a creek bed swollen with stormwater. The ghost and Volpone audience hovered at the rim of the creek, looking down and chanting. Gilbert rose first, black with the muddy water, and swung a punch. It kissed air. Korbach exploded up out of the flood, greased jet black with liquid mud, and doubled Gilbert with a low punch to the gut, then sent him over in a spray of silver droplets with an uppercut to the chin. Gilbert wasn't done. He came back out of the water like a surfacing whale, as loud and vicious as the storm which quaked the sky above, and knocked Korbach back 2-3 steps with blow after blow. Korbach's mouth was split open and his nose broken, flooding his beard with blood. Korbach ducked in low, throwing punches, before he shoulder-charged Gilbert off his feet. Korbach lurched the massive blue blood backwards on his shoulder, legs dangling, then twisted and threw him over himself in a perfect wrestling move, slamming Gilbert down into the creek on his back. Korbach kicked him for good measure. Trooper Alhak, a blue blood, was pounding his hands together wildly until he realized his side had lost. He was about to turn his venom on the cheering Tanith beside him when the undergrowth to his left flickered. Alhak froze. So did the ghost he was about to strike. Something black and abominable grew out of the jumping lights in the thicket. Alhak died, cut into streaks of evaporating flesh. The ghost beside him perished the same way a second later. Then another blue blood, skinned in an instant. The other ghosts and blue bloods who had been cheering the fight on from the creek edge flared in panic. "Oh, Feth," Korbach said, dripping with ooze, looking up. "What?" asked Gilbert, rising beside him.
"That."
The creature was like a dog. If a dog could be the size of a horse. If a horse could move as fast as a hummingbird. A red, arched-backed quadruped with long, triple-jointed limbs and a skinless, blistered pelt. Its skull was huge and short, blunt, with the lower jaw extending beyond the upper, and multiple rows of triangular saw teeth in each. It had no eyes. A warp creature, loosed from the storm and hunting for chaos.
"Oh, Feth," Korbach spat.
"Great Vulpo," barked Gilbert.
The dog thing leapt down into the creek and began to pound towards them. Korbach and Gilbert turned and ran, as fast as they could, through the root-twisted waterway. It was right behind them, baying. The thing leapt on Gilbert and dragged him down, ripping at his carapace armor with its tusks. Strips of armor-plass shredded off his shoulder panels. Gilbert cried out, helpless. Korbach leapt astride the warp beast, pulling its head back by the mane and plunging his Tanith dagger into its throat. Fetid purple blood squirted from the wound, and the thing opened its mouth to howl and squeal.
"Now, blue blood, now!"
Korbach shouted, riding the beast, pulling its skull back. Gilbert pulled a frag grenade from his belt and threw it straight into the beast's mouth, right down its gullet, past the wincing pink larynx. Gilbert threw himself down, and Korbach propelled himself clear. The dog thing exploded from within, showering both them and the creek bed with stinking meat. Korbach pulled himself up out of the fluid muck at the bottom of the watercourse. He looked across at Gilbert, sat with his back against the creek wall, eyes straining.
"You all right?"
Korbach gurgled. Gilbert nodded.
"About time we called a truce, eh?"
Gilbert nodded again. They both got up, unsteady, and filmed with mud and flecks of putrid meat.
"A truce. Yes, a truce."
Gilbert was still stunned.
"For now."
"The ruin, sir. The one I glimpsed before. I found it again."
McCall's voice was soft and brittle, his breath labored. He sat on a fallen log, sipping alternately from a water canteen and a sacra flask that Bragg had manifested. He was bandaged and caked in mud. Gaunt crouched by him, listening carefully. McCall seemed a little spooked by Lilith, but she read this response quickly and held back so Gaunt could talk to his valued scout.
"What is it?"
asked Gaunt. McCall shrugged.
"No idea. Big, old, fortified. It's on top of a mound that I don't think is natural. Too regular. All I know is the enemy are surrounding it thicker than sap flies round a glucose trap."
Gaunt felt a tingle of alarm. Not only did he know precisely what McCall meant, he had a brief, vivid mental flash of the long-bodied insects themselves, swarming around a beaker of glistening fluid on a woodsman's hut stoop. Insects native to Tanith. Insects he had never seen.
"Numbers?"
he pressed on.
"I didn't take a head count,"
McCall muttered dryly.
"I was a little busy. Tens of thousands is my guess. Maybe more. Beyond my line of sight. The terrain was hilly, thick cover. There could have been hundreds of thousands up there."
"What are they after?"
Gaunt wondered out loud.
"I think we have to find out,"
Lilith said quietly. Gaunt rose and looked round at the Inquisitor, her face in shadow from her cowl.
"Before we explore the insanity of sending 60 men up against a possible force of hundreds of thousands, may I remind you that we can't even find this place? Our locators and auspects are screwed. My scouts can't tell one direction from another. Feth, McCull's my best, and he admits he only found it again by accident."
Lilith nodded.
"There is a deep level of misdirection and concealment in this storm. I don't know the answer,
I could lead you there again,
McColl said darkly from behind them. Gaunt turned to look at him. You could? You claimed it was elusive before. McColl rose shakily to his feet.
That was then. I don't know. I just feel I could find it again now. Something in my bones. It would be like finding my way home again.
Gaunt looked at Lilith.
Let's try, she said. McColl seems confident, and I trust him like you do. If opposition gets too hot, we can pull out again.
Gaunt nodded. He was about to call up Raglan and issue new orders to advance when the dull crump of a frag grenade rolled through the storm. A few moments later, las guns and hell guns were firing, sporadic, the distinctive crack of laser fire overlapping the higher shriek of hell shots. Gaunt scrambled down the bank, pulling out his chainsword, shouting for reports. Sergeant Lerod was directing the men in the east flank of the picket.
Lerod? Sir, there are things coming out of the storm, sir. Brutes! Creatures!
Gaunt peered out into the dark jungle and saw scuttling monstrosities being born out of tendrils of lightning. There was a sickening whiff of chaos. Blue blood and Tanith guns blew the things apart as they came close.
Warp creatures,
Lilith hissed, appearing by his side.
Manifestations of this unholy storm.
Mindless, but lethal. Korbeck staggered up, looking very much the worse for wear. He was ordering the west flank of the picket to loop back closer to the center.
What happened to you?
Gaunt asked sharply, seeing an equally bedraggled Gilbert moving in with a fire team of bluebloods.
Bit of a fight, Korbeck said. Some fething thing came out of the dark.
Gaunt didn't want to know any more. This was no time for fierce reprimands. He had to keep the whole unit tight and together. He keyed his microbead.
Gaunt to brigade. We're advancing. Double time. Spearhead formation. Tanith 1st Platoon and half the Volponi unit at the point. Take your direction from Scout Trooper McColl. Everyone else, watch the flanks and the rear. Inquisitor Lilith instructs that warp spawn could appear around or among us at any time. Don't hesitate. Shoot. Sergeant Lerod, take a 6-man drill and guard the back of the formation. All commanders acknowledge understanding of these orders and signal readiness.
A chatter of responses came back swiftly. Raglan, monitoring them with the voxcaster, nodded to Gaunt that all the brigade had signaled in. Gaunt hadn't finished. The devoted Tanith had made his commissarial duties easy these last few years. But now they were in thick, spooked, and the company was mixed with troopers he didn't know or even trust. Morale, discipline, the watchwords of the commissariat. He thought back to his training at the Schola Progenium, to his field apprenticeship as a cadet under Oktar. He took the speaker horn of the vox set from Raglan.
I won't pretend this will be easy, but it is vital. Vital to Imperial success on this world. Vital, perhaps, to the entire crusade. The enemy and their ambitions will be denied if it takes every spark of our lives and every drop of our blood. We fight for the Emperor today. Fight as if we were standing at his side as his chosen bodyguard. Protect the men to your left and right as if they were the Emperor himself. Do not slacken. Do not falter. Victory awaits you, and, if not victory, then the glory of a brave death in service to the golden throne of Terra. The Emperor will provide, if you are true. His hand guides us, his eyes watch over us, and even in death he will bring us to him, and we shall sit in splendor at his side beyond the eternity gate. For lost Tanith, for mighty Volponi, for Imperial Earth, advance!
Like a single lithe entity, the brigade swept up the escarpment, pushing onwards into the jagged hills as the storm shook the world around them. Blue Blood and Ghost moved in perfect, trained order together, all animosities set aside. Gaunt smiled as he observed the tight-drilled formation of his own, and was suitably impressed that it was matched by the bulky Volponi elite. Every now and then, las shots sang out from the vanguard as warp things were sighted and dispatched. Lilith moved with him. She slid a plasma pistol out from under her cloak and charged it with the flick of her black-gloved hands.
Good speech, she grinned at him. Got them motivated. Oktar trained you well.
You've checked up on me. My background.
I'm an Inquisitor, Gaunt. What do you expect? I inquire.
And what are you really inquiring about here? On Monthax? He asked curtly.
What do you mean?
I'm no psyker, but I read people well enough.
This is about more than victory here, more than the successful prosecution of psychodeviance in our forces. You have an agenda. She flashed a smile at him. No mystery, Ibram. Back on the Sanctity, I told you. Buladin had reported back to us because it was suspected some powerful psycho component might be at work here. We thought that it was the enemy itself, that we were in for a mind war. But now, this ruin. The foe embark on an advance, ignoring us completely, and seem hell-bent on taking that place. You've got to wonder why. You've got to believe that there's something very valuable up there. Something that caused this storm. She shrugged. Or something that made them cause this storm to cover their movements towards it. But I think your guess is probably more likely.
And that's what you want?
It's my duty, Ibram, and I don't think I need to explain that concept to one of the Imperium's best commissars.
Don't try distracting me with flattery. Give me some idea what you mean by something valuable.
Think back to Menazoid Epsilon. I told you, I checked your background thoroughly. As an Inquisitor, I got to look at some very classified reports.
You know what was at stake there. Gaunt was wary. You're talking about technology. Artifacts.
She nodded. It could be.
Ancient human? Alien?
Lilith produced something from her pocket. McColl found this. He dug it out of a tree stump at a battle site just before the storm hit. You tell me what you think it means.
She held up the metal star with the sharpened points. Gaunt stared at it with dark comprehension.
Now you know as much as I do.
The brigade moved down a deep defile into a tree-sheltered vale that blocked the raging storm partially for the first time. Gaunt was becoming numb with the incessant wind and rain, and knew his men must be too. It was a blessed temporary relief to move through the deep gorge with its almost cathedral-like arches of ancient cattails and clopias, where rain, arrested by the leaf canopy, simply drooled down to the ground in long, slow, sappy streams. The storm raged, muffled, far above them. Gaunt moved up to McColl at the point of the formation.
Still on track, McColl nodded. Like I said, I couldn't lose the trail now if I wanted to.
Like coming home, you said, Gaunt reminded him. McColl closed his eyes and saw Ilone just ahead, beckoning him back to the farmstead. She was whispering promises of a hot supper and of rowdy boys ready for one of their father's fireside tales before bed.
You have no idea, Commissar.
The advancing tide of Chaos Warriors only stopped when the numbers of their dead choked the passageway. Rorn ordered his platoon back, and they hauled a set of double doors closed, barring them to seal the tunnel. Milo helped Weln swing the doors shut, his fingers tracing the heraldic badge of the Tanith Elector inscribed on the heavy, gnarlwood panels. He blinked, and for a second saw taller, more slender doors of polished onyx, marked with alien runes he did not understand.
What's up?
Weln asked, panting. Milo blinked again. The doors were arched gnarlwood in the Tanith pattern again, the Elector's insignia clearly marked. Fagor and McKendrick dropped a long bar across the door loops to lock it tight. Beyond the thick barrier, they could hear muffled explosions and the rasp of flamers as the enemy tried to unblock the corpse-packed tunnel. The 8 Tanith men were exhausted. A day ago, at the Founding, none of them, with the possible exception of Rorn and Fagor, had ever fired a weapon in anger, let alone killed. Now they were truly baptized. There was no counting the dead they had piled up. Kaun sank to his heels against the wall, fighting for breath.
Are we lost? He asked. Is Tanith lost?
Rorn turned to face him, fire in his eyes.
Are we alive? Is Tanith living? Get up! Get up and move! Only that feckless off-worlder Gaunt seems to have given up on Tanith. Withdraw? Abandon? What kind of leadership is that? He'd make wordless ghosts of us.
Ghosts, murmured Larkin, leaning slackly against the far wall, cheek and shoulder pressed against the cold stone. Gaunt's ghosts.
What did you see?
Milo asked directly, blood racing in his ears. It was like a dream was breaking in his head.
Ignore him, Fagor ordered. Fething fool is weak in the head. But for his good eye, I'd have shot him as a dead weight before now.
No, began Milo. This isn't right. It...
Of course it's not right,
Fagor snarled into Milo's face. Milo winced as spittle hit his cheek.
The Imperium comes to Tanith when it needs men, but where is the Imperium now when Tanith needs it? They're leaving us to die.
Cafran pulled Fëanor back from Milo sharply.
Then we'll die well, Fëanor. We'll die fitting well.
The young trooper's face was bright with passion. The thought of Laria burned in his mind. She was out there somewhere, and he would fight and kill again to save this place and be with her once more.
Cuff's right, Fëanor,
McKendrick said. Weln and Caon both nodded in agreement.
Let's die well, so Tanith can live.
And faith any off-world commissar who says otherwise,
spat Caon. Fëanor, subdued, turned and nodded, deftly exchanging the power cell of his lasgun for a fresh one. Rorn had been absent for a few moments and now strode back into view.
I hear fighting down the hall, maybe 300 spans away. Sounds like another group of our boys in defense. I say we move in to support.
McKendrick nodded.
Bolster our numbers. Maybe they know where the Elector is sheltering.
If we could get him to the transport stables, we could maybe fly him to safety in a cutter,
Caon added. Rorn nodded.
Fëanor, make the door a surprise.
Fëanor grinned and took out a brace of tube charges from his pack. He strapped them with quick, practiced diligence to the door bar. Anything that broke in here now, after them, would snap the trigger wire and bring the hallway down on top of them.
Let's go,
Rorn ordered. Milo fell into step with the others as they hurried on down the long palace hallway, bootsteps resounding from the stone flags. He wished with all his heart and soul he could work out what was wrong here, with reality. There was no other word. Reality itself seemed wrong and dreamlike, and it was making his stomach turn. It must be the Chaos Demons, Milo thought. Maybe Major Rorn knew who... Milo paused. Major Rorn? In the tents of the Founding Fields outside Tanith Magna, Rorn had bivouacked with the common soldiers. A trooper. Nothing more. No rank, no seniority. Since when had he got the collar pins and the promotion? Have I forgotten something? Milo wondered. Have I? Another flicker in his mind. An image of a cramped cabin on a starship. Rorn, Korbeck, Milo. A deputation. A tall, powerful, lean-faced man that could only have been Commissar Colonel Ibram Gaunt, rising to meet them. How could he know what this Gaunt looked like? He'd never seen him. He could hear Gaunt speaking, making bold, confident field promotions. Colonel Korbeck, Major Rorn. Another dream? There was no time to think about it. They were almost on the fighting. Gunshots, screaming, just ahead. That wasn't Lasfire, Milo thought to himself, as he and all the platoon checked stride and raised weapons. He'd heard enough lasgun exchanges in the last half an hour to know the distinctive snap. This was an eerie singing shrill, a shrieking, a buzzing, like the saw note of a wasp, amplified and broken into harsh, serried blasts. What the feth was it?
You hear that?
He gasped to Larkin beside him. Larkin was tuning the nightscope on his long gun, stabbing a slender target beam of porcelain blue light up at the roof. What? Lasgun's on full auto? Yeah, someone's having a busy day. It's not a lasgun, thought Milo. It's not. Third platoon rounded a corner in the hallway, moving in tight overlap formation, and broke into a wide audience hall of dark, volcanic stone. Shattered stained glass windows depicting Anroth, the household and forest spirits of Tanith, lined one side of the vaulted chamber. Gnarlwood pews, many shattered or overturned, filled the main body of the room. The banner of the Elector hung in smouldering tatters over an oriole window at the far end. Three Tanith troopers, their backs to them, were in position behind the pews, blasting with lasguns down at an arched door under the oriole. Chaos spawn were battling to get in through the door, their dead sprawled all around the entrance. Five or more other Tanith troopers lay dead amid the wooden wreckage. Without question or hesitation, the third fell in beside their brethren and took up the fight, blasting at the doorway and cutting into the advancing enemy. The three Tanith holding the chamber glanced around in surprise at the newcomers. Milo didn't recognize any of them, though the colonel was an unforgettable giant with a mane of white hair riven with a red streak, a long, noble face and the blue tattoo of a scythe on his cheek.
For Tanith! For the Elector! For Terra!
Rorn yelled as he blasted.
The big colonel hesitated again, then returned his attention to the killing.
As you say,
he boomed melodiously, his accent strange.
For Tanith.
Muon Noll of the Dire Avengers aspect had been holding the green onyx vault with a squad of his warriors, seeing them cut down one by one as chaos forced their way into the chamber via the diamond-shaped prayer chute at the end, under the rosette of spirit stones set high in the wall beneath the wraith silk standard of Dulthi. The only cover was the tangled mess of psychoplastic benches that had once lined the celebrant vault, benches that had been splintered or wilted by enemy fire. To the side of them, slender pointed windows paned with translucent wraithbone showed images of Asurion, the Phoenix King, Cain of the Bloody Hand, Vol, the crippled smith god, Morai Heg, the fate crone, and Liliath the Maiden, goddess of dream fortune, backlit by Farseer Eon Kull's warp storm outside. It was Liliath whom Muon Noll most worshipped, that beautiful diviner of futures and possibilities. He wore her rune on a thread around his neck, under his jade-blue aspect armor. Muon Null's white-crested helmet was dinted with black lascores, and the red plume crest was singed. Still, Uliowai, Lord Eon Kull's holy Bwana, spat wickering onslaughts of jagged, flickering star rounds at the foe, slicing them to pieces, 1,000 rounds in each tight burst. The stabilizing gyros whirred as the great, ornate shrieker cannon bucked in his mesh-gloved hands. The accelerator field shimmered around the muzzle base. Uliowai, the kiss of sharp stars. He had perhaps 6 rods of solid ammunition left. He would make them count. For Liliath, he would make them count. For Dulthi. Suddenly, 8 humans, in drab, muddy uniforms, fell in beside him, blasting their lasguns at the enemy. They were resilient and fierce, and seemed to show no shock or surprise at their surroundings, or sudden, newfound comrades in arms. Psychically, Muon Noll ordered his remaining men to accept them and fight on. This was undoubtedly Lord Eon Kull's work, and Lord Eon Kull's deceit. And Cain, but these Monkey fought. Like they were fighting for their own homeworld, it seemed, fighting for everything they loved. In under 5 minutes, the reinforcement of the human soldiers had driven the chaos spawn back. They pushed forward together down the prayer chute and killed the last of the attackers, closing a great stone hatch shut to block the rest. The master of the bodyguard turned to the slim, dark-haired human who appeared to be the newcomer's leader. He searched for his grasp of low Gothic, as he had learned in the training symposiums of Dulthi Craftworld.
I am Muon Noll of Dulthi, of this way place. Your intervention and aid is greeted with welcome. Lord Farseer Eon Kull will thank you for it.
Colonel Munol from Tanithdale. Good to see you, boys, and no mistake. The Elector needs all the men he can get right now.
The tall Tanith officer with the mane of white hair turned to the third as the shutter hatch closed. The exploded carcasses of chaos troops lay all around them. Rawn nodded.
Glad to help. I'm Rawn, Major. Commanding, well, what's left of 3rd Platoon? Place us where you want us, Colonel.
Munol nodded, but he seemed bewildered somehow, Milo thought. Come to that, he'd never seen a Tanith man with anything but black hair. Not only were Munol's white locks odd, but both his men, who seemed uneasy now he noticed, were white-haired too. Colonel Munol nodded to a doorway to the left. It was a strange gesture. And what kind of weapon was he holding? A lasgun, but long and extended, longer and thicker than Larkin's sniper gun. Milo felt something tugging anxiously at his mind.
If you're willing, Rawn human, the western emplacements need support desperately, Colonel Munol was saying.
Lead on,
barked Rawn, changing his energy cell and dropping the spent one to the floor. Munol shrugged and nodded, beckoning them after him. Rawn human. Had he misheard? Milo followed, unnerved. Human? The nightmare refused to slip away. He hated the terrible, nauseous feeling of confusion. At a fast pace, Munol led the third and his own men down a black granite corridor. Ahead of them, through an archway, they could see 2 dozen more Tanith troopers lining a battlement, firing lasguns down into the stormy night. Except that the noise was the shrieking chatter of something odd and otherworldly, not the reassuring snap return of lasfire. Rawn hurried beside the tall colonel, Fëanor at his heels.
"Can you believe this luck?" he laughed. "Chaos attacking us on the very day of our founding."
"No, indeed," Manol replied.
"I'll be honest with you, Manol. I almost didn't sign up," Rhaun went on. "What kind of life is it, fighting your way through the stars for the love of some fething, uncaring emperor? No hope of ever going home again."
"Not an enticing prospect, Rhaun, human," Manol agreed.
"Feth, I had a nice life back in Tanith Attica. A nice little business, if you understand me. Nothing too illegal, but, you know, on the wrong side."
"I understand."
"Fëanor was with me back then, weren't you, Fëanor?"
Rhaun said, nodding at his comrade.
"Aye, Rhaun, aye. Nice work, good returns. Didn't want to give it up. But Feth take me for a Tulan. I'm glad I did. Feth a golden throne. Thank the Anroth, I'm armed and ready to stand for Tanith at this dread hour."
"We all thank the Anroth for that, Rhaun human,"
Manol replied.
They were out on the battlements now, enemy fire ripping over them. Colonel Manol called to his Tanith soldiers, who looked around from the loopholes and crenellations where they had been firing down at the foe. White hair, streaked with red, thought Milo with a shudder. They all have white hair. He thought he was going to be sick.
"Men of Dolthi,"
Manol exclaimed.
"Dolthi? Dolthi? Where was that?" Milo wondered.
"Our kin arrived to fight with us. Major Rhaun and other humans. Treat them well. They are resolute and with us to the end."
A rousing cheer greeted Colonel Munnell's words. Rhaun ordered the third in alongside the Tanith already in place, taking position and firing down into the stormy dark over the jagged lip of laser-chewed stonework. Milo was about to take his place when he saw Larkin was cowering behind them all, crouched in the corner of the battlement away from the fight, clutching his sniper rifle and shaking uncontrollably. Milo crossed to him.
"Larkin, what is it?"
"I took a look through my scope, but Bryn, they're not human."
"What?"
Milo felt his guts clench, but he wasn't going to give in.
"I know what I saw through my scope. It never lies. This big bastard Munnell and the rest, they're not Tanith."
Milo snatched the sniper gun out of Larkin's wavering hands and sighted it at Munnell, looking through the scope. The bead of the blue light beam kissed Munnell's drab camo cloak like a tiny spotlight. Milo looked through the scope viewer, seeing Munnell as a ghost of blues and shadows. Munnell, as if sensing the beam on him, turned to look back at Milo. Through the scope, Milo saw Munnell as he swung slowly around, his eyes hooked and slanted in his cold, pale face. A second more, and those eyes became the visor slits of a great, sculpted helmet of gleaming white armor, backed by a towering crest of red feathers. Munnell's gray fatigues became a tight suit of blue armor that locked majestically about his huge, powerful frame. The lasgun in his hands became a long, fluted lance weapon with a ridged, coiled pipe, silver vents, and a beautiful inlay of chased pearl and gold. Munnell became quite the most frightening thing Milo had ever seen.
"Oh, my Emperor," he breathed. "The Eldar!"
Lilith's brigade broke from the gorge into a fan of lowlands, where the jungle had vanished under sculptural folds of mud which had slid in vast curls down the slopes and obliterated everything in their path. The going was slower, the troops wading waist-deep in ochre slime in some places. Above the roar of the storm, the forward scouts could now pick up the sounds of massed combat from the valley beyond. Flashes of light backlit the hilltop, and it wasn't lightning. Gaunt ordered battle readiness via an encrypted vox burst, marshalling the Volpone heavyweights up the flank of the hill under Gilbert's lead, and funneling the ghosts in two detachments, led by Lerod and Korbeck, along the edge of the mudslip below. Gaunt and Lilith moved at the front of Korbeck's band. McColl had led them true. Round the curve of the hill, they got their first sight of the mound and its ruin, and the massed forces of the enemy surrounding it. Even prepared by McColl's description, Gaunt found the scale was immense. Thousands of enemy troops, some with heavy weapons, were swarming the mound's slopes and bombarding the great dark edifice with a force stone had no right to resist. The entire scene was a flickering mess of fire flashes and explosions. The wet air was pungent with blood and thermite. The guardsmen were engaging before they realized it. Gilbert's Bluebloods had come into the rear positions of enemy heavy weapons emplacements, and the crews were turning, startled, counterattacking with close-quarter sidearms.
A moment later, and both detachments of ghosts were hemmed in by chaos units that peeled back from the main assault to face this surprise rear contact. Lasfire and bolt rounds seared a miserable light streak crisscross over the smooth mudflats. Blasting with his bolt pistol, Gaunt saw a tiny opportunity. Break and fall back now, or become locked irrevocably into the fighting. He saw Gilbert's unit spill down the rise and fall upon the enemy weapon stations with a ferocious and admirable grace, overwhelming and slaughtering them in a matter of a minute or two. The powerful hellguns, supported by two grenade launchers and a plasma rifleman, ripped into the hindquarters of the gun crew's position and cut them down. Gilbert haughtily voxed his success as his men took over control of the enemy weapons, turning missile launchers and field artillery on the ranks of the Chaos Army beyond. The Volpone 10th Elite were damn good, Gaunt had to admit. Rotation training on all combat disciplines meant that they could take a gunpost and then man that gun as surely and deftly as if they were dedicated artillery troops. Gaunt knew the moment had gone. To break now would have left the Volpone alone. His choice was made for him. Battle was truly joined, and there would be no respite. The twin prongs of the ghosts punched into the rear of the besiegers. Gilbert, tactically astute, turned the aim of captured guns down the turn of the valley and covered the ghost push, creating huge breaks in the enemy's makeshift flanking maneuver. Shells whistled down under Gilbert's direction, pinpoint accurate, throwing ribbons of mud, strands of foliage, and pieces of chaos troopers into the air, not 20 meters in front of the advancing ghosts. The fighting was close range and white hot. Incredibly, but for a few grazes and glancing burns, Gaunt found his men suffered no casualties. Within 5 minutes of first contact, the Imperials had cut a wedge into the enemy rearguard, made up half a kilometer of ground, and slaughtered upwards of 200 enemy troops, at no mortal cost. Gilbert held the line as long as he could, but there came a point, mutually agreed between him and Gaunt over the Voxlink, where the separation of the two small Imperial advances would become too great. When the signal was given, the Bluebloods mined the gun emplacements and pushed on, scything a double-time advance to swing themselves in behind the ghosts. Timed explosions, staggered and staggering, set off the emplacement munitions and excavated a new valley where a small plateau had been. Into the heat now, on the lower slopes of the mound, the Imperial Expedition Force slicing a break in the foe as a spearhead formation. Ghosts to the right, Volpone to the left, with Gaunt and Korbeck at the tip. Gaunt knew the Tanith fought well, but he had never seen them discharge themselves so determinedly, so brilliantly. In his heart, he couldn't believe that this was a simple response to his motivational speech. They were fighting for something, something deep in their hearts, something that would not be denied.
"For Tanith! For Tanith, bless her memory!"
he heard Korbeck yelling as he advanced. The cry, as it was taken up by ghosts all around him, prompted a deep, emotional response in Gaunt. It shocked him. They were indeed fighting for Tanith, not for some memory or for a sense of vengeance. They were fighting for the love of their homeworld, of the misty cities, the darkling woodlands, the majestic seas. He knew this because he felt it too. He had spent all of a day on Tanith before the fall, and most of that inside the dim anterooms of the Elector's Palace at Tanith Magna. But it felt as if it had been his home, something he had grown to love through years of upbringing, something that was still attainable. With Korbeck and two other ghosts, he was the first to reach a defense ditch on the lower slopes of the mound where superior numbers of chaos filth were turning from their assault of the ruin to repel the hind attack. Gaunt led with his chainsword, slicing the enemy apart. It seemed like he was lasproof. All opposing shots went wild. The joy of Tanith sang in his heart. He dropped into the ditch, cutting the first aggressor before him open down the middle, then swung the whining blade left to decapitate another. In his other hand, his bolt pistol blasted down the ditch, blowing the legs off two charging ghouls with fixed bayonets. His bolter clacked empty. Korbeck was beside him, bellowing, blasting with his lasgun at figures who fell and squirmed and fled down the narrow defile. To the other side, troopers Yale and McTee fought hand to hand with silver daggers, passionate, furious. Beyond them, Bragg, blasting with his autocannon over the ditch top. Gaunt threw his bolter and his sword aside and grabbed the firing handles of an enemy storm bolter with a belt feed set into the lip of the ditch. The massive gun was set on flakboard, with wire tie-downs to prevent the tripod from skating. Gaunt thumbed the trigger and swept the shuddering gun left and right, decimating the ranks of enemy advancing up the hill above him. He felt a hand on his arm. Lilith was beside him, her face pale, her eyes full of tears.
"What?"
he barked, continuing to fire.
"Can't you feel it? You're swept up in the storm magic too."
He released his hands, and the drum belt rattled round on auto-feed.
"Magic? The web of deceit I spoke of. It's inflamed all your men. The blue bloods too. It's tearing at my mind. Gaunt!"
Involuntarily, he held her. She pushed him off after a second.
"I'm all right. All right.
Lilith.
Whatever, whoever, it is up there in the ruin. They're preying on our emotions."
"What do you mean?"
I think they want all the help they can get, Gaunt. They've woven a psychic spell through the storm that makes us respond by touching our deepest desires. For your ghosts, this is Tanith, a Tanith where it's still possible to win and save the world. For the Bluebloods, it's Ignix Majur, where they lost after a desperate fight. But Ibram, it's killing me. So strong, so powerful.
Gaunt fought to catch his breath.
Why me? Why Tanith?
What? She asked, wiping her puffy eyes.
I'm not Tanith, but the will inside me responded that way. Why aren't I fighting for some great cause in my own life? Why have I been living and breathing Tanith in my waking dreams all this while?
She smiled, simply and painfully, her perfect face lit by the fire flashes around them.
Don't you know it, Ibram? Tanith is your cause. No matter if you were born there or not, you've devoted your service and life to these men, to the memory of their world. The fate of Tanith consumes you, as it does them. And though you're not a true son of the forests, this magic plays on your deepest urges. You're a ghost, Ibram Gaunt, whether you know it or not. You're not just their master. You're one of them.
Gaunt pulled off his cap and wiped brow sweat back into his cropped hair. He was panting, painfully high on adrenaline.
This is all false, he began. We're being used, manipulated, driven to fight by something that touches our deepest causes.
Then, in the Emperor's name, if it helps us kill the Chaos scum, let's not deny it. Let's use it.
Gaunt cued his microbead and opened a channel to his force.
60 men against 10,000? The stuff of legends! Push on for Tanith and for Ignix Majur! Take the slope and make for the ruin!
At the head of his wave of bluebloods, Gilbert heard the call and screamed into the night as he emptied yet another power pack out through the glowing muzzle of his hellgun. The Volpone took the rise, scattering enemy before them. Larod, who now thought himself truly immortal, led his detachment up the mound, stampeding over the panicking, splintering waves of chaos filth. Korbeck, with Bragg firing solid lines of destruction from his heavy weapon at his side, pushed the other ghost band up between the prongs. To either side of the Imperial advance, 100,000 soldiers of the foe swarmed and regrouped. But the 60 or so Imperials cut a line up through them that wouldn't be denied. Years later, painstakingly reconstructing the details of this assault from patchy data collected at the time, Imperial tacticians on Foridon would be utterly unable to account for the success of the action. Even given the surprise nature of the assault from the rear, there was no sense to the data. Simple statistics should have had Gaunt's expeditionary force cut down to the last man, at most a half kilometer from the ruin. The tacticians would factor in charismatic leadership, tactical insight, luck. And still, there was no mistake. Gaunt's men should have been entirely slaughtered long before they reached the ruin. But that was not the case. Gaunt drew his forces, without the loss of a single man, up to the walls of the ruin, perhaps 30 minutes after they had first engaged the back of the enemy positions. They had cut through a legion of the foe, who outnumbered them 10,000 to 1, and attained a target area the enemy had been trying to force its way into for hours. They slew approximately 2,400 soldiers of the enemy. Eventually, after a prolonged analytical study, the tacticians would decide that the only explanation could be that there were no enemy units on the field that day. It was all an illusion. Gaunt had mounted an assault through open, undefended ground. Only then did the computations and the statistics and the possibilities match up. None of them could admit that this wasn't the case. And so, perhaps the greatest and most spectacular success of Makaroth's Great Crusade, outclassed and outnumbered but still successful, was deleted from the Imperial annals as a phantom engagement. Such is the fate of true heroism. There was a door, a tall, pointed arch of stone, faced with stone, in the side of the smooth flank of the ruin. Gaunt grouped his force around it as relentless firepower strafed up at them from the muddled but regrouping legions of the enemy. Gilbert intended to mine the door in the hope of blowing it open, though, as Korbeck pointed out, the scorch marks on the stone facing seemed to indicate that the enemy had tried that more than once and failed. They were about to argue the point some more when the door opened. Bryn Milo stood there, looking out at them, flanked by Kafran and a spectacularly grim Eldar warrior with a red plume set behind his white helmet. The storm flashed above, still furious and wild.
"You've come this far," Milo said. "Now let's finish this."
Sealed inside the onyx walls of the Wayplace, Gaunt and his force heard the low wailing of Eldar mourners, remorsefully singing the last songs of closure. Muon Noll faced Gaunt for a long while, until Gaunt saluted and held out his hand.
"Ibram Gaunt."
Nothing more need be said, Gaunt thought. Muon Noll looked at the proffered hand, then slung Uliawai over his shoulder and clasped it. He spoke, a bewildering slither of otherworldly language.
"You've just been formally worshipped as a fellow warrior,"
Lilith said, stepping up. Muon Noll turned his huge gaze to look at her.
"I am Lilith of the Imperial Inquisition," she stated.
Muon Noll, a head taller than even Gilbert, paused and nodded slowly. Gaunt looked round sharply at the Inquisitor.
"We're not getting anywhere fast," he hissed. "Does anyone here speak Eldar?"
"I do,"
Lilith said, but Muon Noll spoke simultaneously.
"There is no need,"
he said in melodiously accented low Gothic.
"I understand. You must follow me now. The Farseer Lord awaits."
"Fine," Gaunt began. Muon Noll stepped back.
"No, not you. The female."
Lord Eon Kull felt the wash and burn of the Chaos Hosts as they assaulted the ruin around him. Fuhain Falchior had begun to rattle in her rack again. The door of the inner place slid open, and Muon Noll entered, escorting a cowled human female, a hulking stormtrooper in grey and gold, and a human male in a long coat and cap. Muon Noll bowed. Lilith did likewise. Gilbert and Gaunt remained upright. Eon Kull spoke, perfectly using the clumsy low Gothic he had once wasted a brief year mastering.
"I am Eon Kull Farseer. My enchantments have brought you into this. I make no apologies. The way must be closed to the dark, and I will use all my powers to accomplish that."
Muon Noll took a step forward, gesturing to indicate Lilith.
"My lord, this female is called Lilith in the human tongue. Is that not a sign?"
"Of what?"
"Of purpose, lord."
Eon Kull seemed about to answer, as if he too recognized the symbolic coincidence. But then he slumped against the side of his throne, blood leaking from under the seal of his helmet.
"My lord!"
Gaunt reached him first, pulling off the tall helm and cradling the pale skull of the worn-out, dying Eldar Farseer in his gloved hands.
"I can send for medics, healers," he began.
"No, no, no time, no purpose to it. I want to die, Gaunt human. The way must be closed before chaos can corrupt it."
Holding Eon Kull, Gaunt looked up hopelessly at Lilith. She came and took his place, embracing the frail Eldar's head and body. "That's what the Chaos Forces are here on Monthax IV, isn't it, Farseer Lord?"
"You speak truth. This way has stood open for 27 centuries. Now the enemy have found it, and through it they will invade Dolthi Craftworld. For the sake of Dolthi, for the living souls of the Eldar, this way must be closed. For this great purpose I have conjured you. For this great purpose my Aspect warriors have given their all. and their last.
All of this, some trick of a stinking alien scumbag, Gilbert growled. Gaunt launched himself forward, bringing down Muon Null before the enraged Eldar could splinter Gilbert to pieces with his shrieker cannon. Gaunt got up off the Aspect warrior and strode across the Onyx room to face Gilbert.
What? What did I say that was so bad?
Gilbert asked, a second before Gaunt's fist laid him out unconscious on the flagstones.
Ibram!
Gaunt turned as Lilith cried out. She was cradling Eon Kull in her arms. Gaunt rushed to her, with Muon Null at his elbow, but there was no mistaking the signs. Farseer Eon Kull, the old one, was dead. They placed his frail remains on the floor.
We are lost, then,
Muon Null said.
Without the Farseer, we can no longer conjure the pacts with the warp and close the web. Dolthi will die as surely as Farseer Eon Kull.
Lilith can do it, Gaunt said suddenly. Muon Null and Lilith looked at him.
I know you can, and I know you want to. That is why you're here, Lilith.
What are you talking about, Ibram? She said.
You're not the only one with pull, the only one who can chase records and dig out hushed files. I did my research on you as surely as you did mine. Lilith Abfaquan, Psyker, Inquisitor, Black Notation Rating.
God of Terror, she smiled. You're good, Ibram.
You don't know how good. The Black Ships singled you out when they found you. Daughter of a planetary governess whose world edged the stamping grounds of the Eldar. She died in one of their raids. You swore first to destroy them, and then, as you grew, to understand the strange species that had robbed you so. And that's why you wanted this mission. You craved a chance to contact your nemesis.
You want this, Lilith. She sank and sat hard on the onyx floor beside Eon Kull's corpse. Muon Null lifted her up.
You are Liliath. You can do what the Farseer would have done. Close the gate, Liliath. Take us back to Dolthi, forever.
Lilith looked at Gaunt. Gaunt noticed for the last time how beautiful she was. Do it. That is why you came. She took his shoulders, hugged him briefly, and then pulled away to look into his face.
It would have been interesting, Commissar.
Fascinating, Inquisitor. Now do your job. They said goodbye. McCall said goodbye to Ilone. Caffran said goodbye to Laria. The ghosts said goodbye to Tanith, and the Blue Blood bade farewell to Ignix Majur. A cold light, hard as vacuum, bright as diamond, pierced the sky above the ruin, evaporating the storm in little more than a minute. 75% of the astropaths aboard the Imperial fleet elements in orbit suffered catastrophic seizures and died. The others passed out. The psychic backwash of the event was felt light years away. The spell ended as the way finally closed. The Eldar left Monthax forever and took Lilith back to Dolthi Craftworld with them. She closed the way, as she had, perhaps, been born to do. Once the way was shut, closely targeted orbital bombardments incinerated the massed forces of the enemy. The jungles of Monthax burned. Once the bombardment stopped, Gaunt led his ghosts and the Volpone unit back towards the line. The storm was dead, and pale sunlight fell on them. The world around them was a wasted desert of baked mud and burned vegetation. The only man Gaunt had lost in the final assault had been Lerod, taken by a remarkably lucky glancing shot off the roof of the Eldar Temple. Ibram Gaunt slept for a day and a half in his command cabin. His fatigue was total. He woke when Raglan brought him directives from Lord Militant General Bulladin, orchestrating the Imperial withdrawal from Monthax. He put on his full dress uniform, adjusted his cap, and went out into the smoky sunlight to oversee the Tanith as they packed up and prepared for evacuation. The vast troop transports cast flickering shadows across the lines as they came in, droning down from high orbit. Gaunt could sense the feeling of the men. Weariness, aches, the joy of a great victory somehow dulled and strange. He found Milo sat alone on the side steps of the abandoned infirmary, cleaning his lasgun. Gaunt sat down next to him.
Odd the way things work out, isn't it?
Milo said bluntly. Gaunt nodded.
I think it was a good thing, though.
What?
The Eldar trick,
Good for us. Good for the ghosts.
Explain, Gaunt asked.
I know how I feel. I've heard the men talking too. This was Tanith again for us. For you too, I think. Deep down, I think we all hate the fact we never got a chance to fight for Tanith. Some are blatant about it. Men like Major Ron. Others can understand why we had to leave, why you ordered us out, but they don't like it. He looked around at Gaunt. Just a mind trick, maybe. But for a few hours there, 40 or so of us got to fight for Tanith, got to fight for our world, got the chance to do what we'd always been cheated out of. It felt good. Even now I know it was a lie, it still feels good. It exorcised a few ghosts.
Gaunt smiled. The boy's pun was awful, but he was right. The ghosts of Tanith had laid their own ghosts to rest here. They would be stronger for it. And so would he realized. They were his ghosts, after all. Gaunt's ghosts. That was Ghostmaker, written by Dan Abnett, read by Toby Longworth. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2019.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.